World HD posts on social media may include statements concerning financial market trends and are based on current market conditions, which will fluctuate and may be superseded by subsequent market event. The investment strategies and broad themes discussed in World HD live streams, recordings, and social media posts may be unsuitable for certain investors depending on their specific investment objectives and financial situation. Information and data contained in posts and on live streams have been obtained from sources believed and checked to be reliable, but not guaranteed. You should note that the materials on the social media platforms are provided as is without any express or implied warranties. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. All investments involve a degree of risk, including the risk of loss. Any comments made in the materials are opinions with no guarantee that any expressed course of events will actually transpire, and no compensation has been paid to any person providing a testimonial or comments.
Live from America on Rumble X and LFA TV on this Monday, August 11th, 2025. Good morning. Hope you all had a great weekend. And good morning, Frankie. How are you doing?
Oh, great to be here, Craig. Let's get after it. Hope everyone had a fantastic weekend. And, you know, another day, a few technical issues, but, you know, it's par for the course on a beautiful Monday like today, huh?
Well, and that's the thing, Frankie and I didn't even have a chance to really talk this morning. We were trying to get some technical issues worked out. So it really is a truly good morning to you, Frankie. Good morning. Okay. All right. I can see I don't have some lights on too, but I'll turn those on here in a second, add a little more light to my face. Although I don't know, I kind of like it in the dark mode today.
It's not bad. What do you
think? Maybe just roll a little dark.
I love it.
All right. Well, good morning to everyone out there. We've got Trump Ed in there this morning, always in there. Teffy. Good morning, Teffy. Mary, I am, and Johnny Boy Gaming One.
Love
is that? Do you know that one, Frankie? Is that or is Johnny Boy new?
I've seen
is
him that, around, but
okay,
love to see him
good,
back.
Good to have you.
Gulf Coast
morning.
Gal,
GCG's in here. Good, Crispy Critters. All right,
love it.
Let's see, Crash and Splash. All right, great. Okay, so this week we have a fairly busy day to week. How to put this in perspective? So the last couple weeks, we've watched a few central bank. We're sort of in that, we go through this cycle, right? For those of you who've been following, hopefully you're starting to see this cycle we kind of go through, where, you know, we get central banks, and then after we get central banks, then we get data, right? And then the central banks come back out and they try to make these decisions, and I think President Trump in a lot of ways is trying to short circuit some of that stuff, and I'm going to take a different approach today with some things. We've got this economic data we want to go through. We want to go through a couple headline stories and some things that really changed on this kind of, like, I'm not even sure what you call this, tariff front, with AMD and NVIDIA. And then we've got Intel in the mix still from last week. Intel's going to, Lip-Bu-Tan, the CEO of Intel is going to be making his way to the White House. This is after President Trump last week called for his resignation. And again, you know, what's going on with this guy? Who is he? What's his background? Did Intel do a good job of vetting this guy? Is he selling secrets out to the Chinese? And then we see this whole thing with these chips, right? This is really a fascinating shift of things. And again, I don't know how well this will get covered today, so I want to do a good job of kind of tearing this down of, like, what we just saw the Trump administration do with AMD and NVIDIA, all right? And then we want to go into, and again, we're getting close to the full upside objective in these stocks, right? The NASDAQ's getting up there. It's about at the 7/8 again. The S&P's looking pretty strong. The S&P's lagging. So the NASDAQ's leading, and that's no surprise, right? We know that we've got 7 to 10 stocks in the S&P 500, the Mag 7, the big dogs, that have been, you know, they're a huge amount of this S&P 500, okay? And so when they go up, it drags the S&P up. The problem is it drags the NASDAQ up even quicker, okay, because it's all tech-based and there's higher correlations to NVIDIA, AMD, you know, well, not so much AMD yet, but, you know, the big seven, right? The Microsofts, the Amazons, I guess you could still throw, Tesla in there, right? But you got these seven, and so they drag things up. And so that's what we're watching based off this harmonic structure, which I think has worked. Again, at the beginning out of the gate, it was a little iffy, right? We didn't trade around the breakout zone. We spent time above it between the 1/8 and 2/8. Energy got built. But once we got to the halfway, it really started to show itself, right? It became resistance and it became support. The market got slammed, not last Friday, but the Friday before. It got slammed going into that weekend, and the halfway held perfectly on both markets, NASDAQ and the S&P. So again, we want to go through that. I think we're getting close to the full upside objective on this. And I really want to take a look at some things on the immigration front and how this impacts us, right? We just talk about, you know, getting all these illegal immigrants out of the country. But I want to talk about what this has done to multi-unit housing multi-tenant housing, you know. So I think that's the right way to put it. Multi-unit housing, I guess, is a good way to put it. What it's done there and how they use that, right, to extract from the single family home supply. Okay, so again, they were building these. And so we have a bubble in this multi-unit sector, okay? And a lot of this was based around this immigration and probably some sort of a globalist effort where they said, look, cut back on these single family homes, build more of these multi-unit homes. Again, I don't have facts of this. I'm just trying to read the tea leaves of what's going on. And sort of where we're at, right? Where we're at on this housing thing, because I think this housing thing is, we've been talking about this flaring up, and one of the things that we've talked about multiple times, I don't know if we've done it, you can never talk about this enough. You just don't want to, at some point, people don't listen if you just keep saying the same thing over and over again. But I really want to try to highlight this today, where when construction starts laying off workers, it tends to be, at least it has been, a really good indicator of a recession coming. So again, as we see these stocks getting up to these full upside objectives, and as the mainstream media is going to come out and say, wow, look at this, you know, the NASDAQ's on all-time highs and the S&P is on all-time highs, at some point that comes to an end. And the question is, if that works, if we get to these full upside objectives, and if those hold, then what does that mean? Does it mean a 7 to 10% pullback? Does it mean you know, a quick one like we saw, you know, with Liberation Day where it spikes down, everybody gets panicked, it hits a, you know, plain vanilla pullback into a moving average, and then it's up, up, and away again. Does it mean that? Or does it mean this market's going to start a grind, right? A grind lower, where, because a real bear market is based around hope, okay? So again, you think, wait a minute, a bull market is really based around fear or, you know, concern, climbing the wall of worry, I guess maybe worry, right? A real bull market is based around worry. But a bear market's based around hope. Okay, so again, that's kind of upside down, right? But the key is if we start to go down and they just keep trying to fill people with hope and hope, 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 and the market just keeps going lower and lower and grinding lower, to me, that would be more concerning because when you go down fast, you tend to come back up fast, right? Everybody gets out, you know, and it's really based around fear. So that's fear, right? So market gets driven down, you get this high growth, you know, this big explosion of fear. People panic. Some people, you know, as we call it, you know, barf up their positions, whatever you want to call it. You know, they basically get afraid and they start dumping things. And then the market comes back. Sure enough, the big hands, the strong hands, they call that the weak hands, right? Letting go. And the strong hands come in, you know, supposedly I call them the crooks, really. You know, we can call them what you want, but the market likes to call them the strong hands. I call them the globalist thieves. The point is they come in, they sweep everything up and up, up, and away we go. And that's what I think we really saw after Liberation Day. So does that make sense, Frankie? Any questions with that? I just wanted to kind of lay the groundwork for that because I think we're going to take, if we get the time, again, you never know, we'll run out of time on things, but I really want to go into this and try to dissect what I think's going on and with these harmonic structures coming into play. Do you have any questions on that or anything you see in the chat?
All good. Beautiful. We got some
okay.
Different questions, not related. All good. I'll keep them in the bank.
Wrong question. Okay, I'm gonna turn some lights on here real fast. Love all right, it. There we go. All right, I'm going bright now.
We're back.
We got the dark. Maybe when we get dark later in the end of the show, I'll turn some lights out again. put an up light underneath me so I really look scared when I do this. All right. All right, let's jump in and take a look. We lost some of our technology, so we're just gonna have to go with this today. And we'll throw me down here. Okay, so let's roll through this. This is our data for the week. And we have a few, again, China, Switzerland, right? A couple of these key things, Japan, right? Europe. These are some of these things that we're watching for external influences into the U.S., right? We live in this bubble of the U.S. It's kind of been protected for so many years, for decades. And again, is that, it's changing one way or the other. Is it for better, for worse? I don't know, but it's definitely changing, okay? This bubble that we've been in is changing. Okay, so again, China, new loans. All right, and then we saw some stuff. We'll go into that too. We're going to take a look at Friday's data out of China. They I don't know why they do this, Frankie, but they put this CPI and PPI out late on Friday night. Sometimes I think it's nested in there so that no one really ever pays attention to it. It's kind of because none of the world. What's that?
I was going to say it's a good strategy. It's working.
Because again, it's Friday at 9 o'clock. I mean, what in the world? I mean, you know, think about it. If they're, let's say they're 12. I mean, it's, you know, it's Saturday at noon, you know, I mean, it makes, I don't know. It just makes no sense to me why they would do that. But so anyway, so we'll go, so we got China new loans, $360 billion. Maybe we'll take a look at that. These Monday's light. I guess that's a thing. That's why we have some of these things on there. But we'll reflect on this China new loans, and we'll reflect on the China PPI, Producer Price Index, China CPI, Consumer Price Index from Friday. We get a little bit of stuff out of the Cleveland Fed today. Again, why does that matter? It's the Midwest. It used to matter a lot. Loretta Mester, I think it was, she used to be the head of the Cleveland Fed, and she was kind of an interesting character. We may have, I don't know if we ever ran it. We had a clip ready to run. I don't know if we ever got to it, but kind of an interesting character. Now I don't even know who's in charge of the Cleveland Fed. I'm not even sure. So, you know, we'll find out after today, though, after this stuff comes out. I'll do some reading on that. Anyway, keep moving. So on tomorrow we get Royal Bank of Australia. They have a monetary policy statement. So again, this is that, you know, we started a couple weeks ago with Europe, then the U.S., then we had the U.K. Remember, we looked at that on Friday, the Governor Bailey. Everything's finely tuned. You know, everything's perfect. No big deal. Everything's great. Then we get out of this week, we get the German zoo economic sentiment. Okay, so this long story with this whole zoo thing, ZEW. But the point is, it's kind of a big read of Germany, but it's also a read of what's going on with Europe. So again, we'll take a look at that. U.S. core CPI, that comes out tomorrow as well. And then we get a little bit of leftover from last week on these auctions. We get the German 10-year note auction this week. Why does this one matter? Well, because, again, it's a read into Europe. It's a read into Germany. It's a read into the second largest debt market in the world, right? The U.S. has the largest. Germany has the second largest. Very liquid debt market, relatively speaking, to all the others out there. And so highly traded. I guess that's a better way to put it. The U.S. Treasury is the deepest market in the world. The German 10-year note is the second deepest in the world. And mean that a lot of institutions use those markets. So again, that's why we pay attention to this yield and what the bid to cover is. Are people showing up to buy it? And we get our crude oil inventories out, watching that. But again, crude oil is pretty quiet. You know, we've been talking about that. The idea that, you know, we had that 79.37 we talked about last week. You know, that went all the way back to October of 2023. And then we have the 63.18 that we worked with really through the end of last year and all the way into just recently, really till Iran-Israel stuff popped up and we did the bombing on Iran. Up until that point, really that 63.18 had been holding very nicely, got blown out. Now we're sitting just above it. Okay, so we're sitting between that 79.37, 63.18. And this is part of the reason why, just reflecting on that, I think that this crude oil market could kind of go sideways for some time. And again, we have boundaries, 79.37, even though that one's getting old, it's coming up on 2 years of age. But we have the 63.18 that's a little bit newer, and we have this new harmonic structure, and we're waiting to see how that thing plays out. Okay, so again, crude oil inventory is important, but there's something else going on out there on the energy front, okay? I think it's pretty clear, and I think we've done a decent job of that, Frankie, haven't we? Just trying to throw ideas out there of what's going on in the energy space. We've got these small nuclear reactors, we've got coal, we've got these huge water, these huge hydro plants going up in China that's just causing a huge stir. I mean, we're going to do that on Wednesday, right? We're going to go into that whole hydro plant on China and Tibet. Anyway, but any thoughts on that, Frankie? Anything on the energy front? You think anything you want to throw in there on that?
All good.
Okay.
What was the question there?
Well, the question was, you know, maybe there was no question. Maybe it was just a statement, you know, that...
Agreed. I'm like, oh, no.
Agreed? Okay. Yeah. So I guess here was the question, that there's something going on in this energy space, right? Would you agree that I don't think this is your, like they used to say, you know, this isn't your grandpa's Oldsmobile, right? You know, this is something's different going on in this energy space.
And I do like, where was I seeing? Bill Robin in the chat said, it seems like data centers, which are driving chip demand, et cetera, are going to be built even in a slowdown. Like I'm almost looking at all of these moving factors with AI, these data centers, and all of the nuclear, you know, these different ways to power them. It's like, I don't know if anyone's seen the movie WALL-E, where like the planet's like a mess and nobody's like anywhere, but all the factories, all the servers, everything works great over there, but no one's there. You know, it's like we're almost building up this utopian insanity where people are going to be starving on the streets, but don't worry, the AI, look how beautiful the AI centers are that are controlling everyone, sees all of your, you know, every move. I just, all these things in the air, it just makes you think, you know?
Yep. Well, and I think that's why, you know, that's exactly why I came to you, Frankie, was the one, bring up the thing with Bill Robin in there. We didn't even know it, right? We're just on a wavelength here, you know, but that's the perfect comment. You know, I think that's the perfect context around this of what is going on with this energy. And I think Bill Robin 3 said that, and so did Frankie. So I think that's on point. I think that's I don't think you can say it any better than that right there. Okay, then this week we get more FOMC speakers. We get Barkin, Goolsbee, Bostic. We haven't heard from them in a little while. Last week we had a whole round of them a couple times. And again, we're seeing Bowman. Bowman was a dissenter. She's coming out saying at least 3 rate cuts this year. We have other people coming out saying we're in for 5 in a row where we're just going to – and this is what I've been talking about, right? When the Fed typically gets going, there's usually a trend to it. It's been a long time. I'll see if I can dust it off. But I had this chart that we looked at. Gosh, it was maybe September, probably a year ago. But it showed – we went through and looked at it in terms of the gold market because we were looking at gold and this rally in gold. And how the Fed, when they get going, it tends to be like a pattern. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You know, I think the real takeaway from that chart that we looked at was – when they stop and they restart, that's when it causes confusion for markets. And that's when we've seen a lot of tumultuous, you know, market movements and things like that, especially in some of the commodity space and things. I think markets get confused. I think what happens is corporations get confused. Like they think they're in a trend. They start basing decisions around that. And those decisions take 12 to 18 months to come through. And then by the time, you know, all of a sudden now they're already pointed in a direction. And then all of a sudden the Fed stops or changes direction or does something, and then they restart. It just causes confusion for the corporations. So I think that's maybe what it is, right? There's some kind of a lag in between, you know, what they think's happening, and then they make their decisions, and then it gets disrupted, and then they don't know what to do. And so it causes a little bit of, and again, what does that do? Now they're scrambling in terms of buying commodities and raw goods. Back to the purchasing manager, right? So it creates this cascading effect when that happens. So again, that's why the Fed, you know, again, 99% of the time, I think they're like working in conjunction with us, even though they don't necessarily like us, they still work with us because again, they need to keep us on the mouse wheel, right? They need to keep us going round and round to keep their engine going. So they're kind of working with us, and it's the 1% of the time where they steal the $7 trillion, right? That's the way I look at the Federal Reserve. It's just these central banks, you know, they lull you in, right? It's that sleepy thing where they pull you in, hey, it's okay, come back in the water, everything's good, and then wham, right? They take off your left leg. You're like, ouch, right? Does that make sense? That's kind of the way I look at it, Frankie.
That's perfect.
Okay. All right, it kind of blew that. Let me go back here. Okay, so let's finish up. So then big takeaways for this week, we get the CPI data in the U.S., Consumer Price Index on Tuesday, and then we skip a day, and then Thursday we come back, we get the core PPI, we get the Producer Price Index. We get core, the regular front number, headline number, and everything else. Okay, then we get a little bit that Thursday night out of China industrial production. Want to watch that. The title of the show is something, I think I titled it early this morning and I wasn't probably at my maximum, so I kind of forget, but it's something about everybody's kind of delaying everybody else. And let me just talk about that real quickly here, where we've seen Scott Bessent say that they're sort of letting China's going to have to come around, right? They have to develop this internal growth engine instead of just undercutting markets all the time. So I think we're in a waiting game with China, right? Delay, 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 right? We're right at the, I think tonight is, today or tomorrow is the time where this 90-day truce extension thing has to get extended with China. We're so confused, we wouldn't even know what any of these time frames are. Is that the way you feel, Frankie? Because as much as I track this stuff, I'm like, okay, now when is that tariff end, and when does that one start, and when is this? And so it's mass confusion, and we don't really know what's going on, to be quite honest.
Right.
You know, is that how you feel too, Frankie?
100%.
Like, you get, you know, at the beginning, we're tracking it, and it's not that hard to track, but at this point, we're hip deep in this thing, and it's like, I don't know what's coming next. But that's where we're at on this extension. And so I think the goal is to extend with China as long as possible, let them implode on themselves, because I think they're not far from it. The other thing I think Russia might be doing is letting the Western economy sort of sitting back. And if they can buy time, they're also letting Europe implode, right? They're letting maybe the U.S. implode. And I think that's where we're headed. And that's where I want to get today with this illegal immigration, the housing stuff. So keep that in mind, that, you know, I think Russia had this sort of figured out. Putin and his economists probably had this figured out, that the U.S. was in trouble. But President Trump's bent the curve, and I want to show you how when we get to that. Okay, and then the last thing this week, we get U.S. core retail sales on Friday. We get Empire State Manufacturing. Again, I like to watch these manufacturing index numbers. I think they're good indicators of what's really going on. I don't think they're that manipulated, so that's good. And then we get the master of manipulate. Well, maybe the job stuff is taking over for this, but we're not surprised. But the non-farm payrolls, right, the last couple days we've seen, last couple weeks we've seen President Trump calling out, calling, you know, the manipulation of these numbers. But the real manipulator, the granddaddy in my mind is the University of Michigan consumer sentiment, because I think, oh, I could go off on this one, Frankie. I could go off. Just quickly, let me just say, Max Fisher is the one that funded the Ohio State School of Business, and his nephew is the one that funded the University of Michigan School of Business. And there's a reason why they each put $300 million into these schools to get their, because again, I think it's all part of that mind bending. So you can let your mind wander again. Max Fisher taught Les Wexner. Les Wexner taught Jeffrey Epstein. So again, if you haven't followed along, you can let your mind wander what I mean by that. You know, that there's, they pay for mind bending, okay? And it's, and does that make sense, Frankie? Is that enough to connect the dots there for people without going deep into it?
I think so. They own it all. Okay. I mean, what does $300 million get you? Nothing, right? You can't do it. I mean, it's just for them, right? Hey, go build your, I have no influence over you. Just do your thing. It's all for you guys. I just wanted to see this. I wanted to be able to, you know, give back to the community. I have no part in it. I have no stake. My family, they have no control over this. Do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Do it.
But when it comes time to hire someone who calculates the numbers on these University of Michigan sentiment numbers, we kind of want to say in who that is, right? Not, that person's not doing what we need. We need a new person in there, right, that's recalculating those numbers. Is that connected? I just, you know.
Exactly.
I think it's narrative control. That's what I'm really saying, is I think they pay to get their names on these school of businesses for narrative control. Okay. All right, so again, lots of little fragments there, but I think our audience, at least the ones who watch all the time, can connect those things up. Okay, so let's see, Friday. Okay, recapping Friday. The big takeaway here is, here's the big one. We talked about this live, but Canada employment change was expected at 15,300, okay, and it came in at minus 40.8. So that's a 56,000 miss, right, between the positive 15 to the minus 40. So again, what does this do to Mark Carney, right, who's heading up Canada? Doesn't put them in a great spot, right? The people aren't happy. They're seeing these numbers come through. Not great. Now, the unemployment rate didn't change much. It actually went down, which is weird, okay? So again, it takes another month. We'll see what happens with that, because maybe that number goes down and the other one kind of has a rebound. And we, you know, so that's just that headline number of 15.3 to 40.8, not good for Canada, not good for the leadership in Canada. Then we get this China CPI. This is really why I wanted to go back to Friday, was to look at this. The headline consumer price index CPI came in just slightly below. It was expected at zero, came in at minus 0.1. When you see China actually put a number in the direction of, in this case, deflation, it's probably, there's a good chance it's worse than that, okay? They're just kind of walking it down. So it could be minus 0.3, minus 0.2, minus 0.4, but they just sort of walk things down, right? Again, kind of control. So then we see this on the PPI, the producer price index. And again, if it works the same way in China that it does in the U.S., producer price index is usually up the channel from the consumer, right? The producers, the manufacturers of things, they get the cost, and then it comes down to the consumer level later. So you can see that transmission mechanism. It takes a little time for things to come down, and usually producer price index is a leading indicator of consumer price index. So you see that minus 3.4 go to minus 3.6, both numbers in the negative direction in terms of, you know, inflationary pressures in China. That tells me it's probably worse than that, okay? And we're going to see continued numbers in that direction. All right, that's the reason for recapping that. Let's take a look at today. So again, China new loans at $360 billion. That number probably came out, Frankie. I don't know if you happen to see that. And then we get this China M2 money supply. I'm watching this. What this means is how much money they're pumping out into the system and how effective is it, okay? When they're pumping the system, there's M1, M2, all these different variations. But it really is one, it's the amount of money out in the system and the velocity of how fast it moves around. And the reason, velocity means, are people willing to transact? Do they feel comfortable? Are they willing to let go of a dollar or $100, you know, for something, knowing that there's going to be more coming in after that? But if they feel like, you know, they're not going to, the money's getting tight and it's not going to be coming through, then what does it do? It starts to restrict spending. Okay. And people don't spend. That means the velocity of money slows down. Did that come through, Frankie? Do you see the number on that?
Yeah, 5.41 billion.
On the new loans?
Oh, no, that's Italian trade balance. Is that what you were asking for?
Oh, no, I was looking for the China new loans.
Oh. That came out yet on Friday, you're talking about?
No, it was overnight.
Okay.
I think.
I'm only seeing Italian trade balance because they know Frankie's Italian. They said, I'm just going to give him Italian.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I don't see it yet either. Let me see if that. Okay. Actually, I think it comes out a little bit later today. It was a weird time that came out. Anyway, we'll come back to that. Again, it's nothing we're going to react on. It's just something we want to pay attention to with China. So again, watching China, watching Japan, watching Europe. What else are we watching? Something else important. But anyway, those are the big ones, I think, to keep an eye on in terms of big outside external influences on the U.S. And, okay, Cleveland Fed inflation expectations. Again, that's a tentative time frame on that number. I don't know when that's coming out. I don't think it's out yet. Probably not. It'll probably come out later this morning. So again, some of these numbers, sometimes that's why it's good. We show them and then we come back the next day. And if anything changes, we come back and comment on it. We also get this Japan M2 money supply. So again, watching the money flowing around Japan, watching the money flowing around China, are things comfortable? Looking at debt markets, like we talked about, are people buying the debt? But then also, how are the people feeling? Are they moving money, right? Are they fluid with money movement? Okay, if they start restricting, that starts to restrict economy. As soon as people start putting it between their mattresses, all of a sudden there's not as much money flow out there, and therefore economies tend to start to slow down. So that's what we're watching for. Okay. And then this NAB business out of Australia, that's later tonight. So we'll come back and comment on that tomorrow.
Bill Robin in the chat. The velocity in which money leaves my wallet has definitely increased. Amen to that, brother.
All right. And then I don't know if I... Yeah. Okay. So I think we're good there. What I want to do is just kind of plow through some of this stuff. Let me come back in here since we don't have all of our technology. All right. So so that gets us through that stuff. Let me go through this. So this NVIDIA and AMD. So here's what's interesting is the President Trump has, we know that tariffs have been big, okay? And you can't really, if we're going to delay this whole situation with China and we're not going to really lock things down, the way to go about this is something new, okay? And that's what they've done. And this is sort of an innovative thing that I don't think any trade representative has ever seen. I saw a few. I was watching some comments on what happened here, and watching the trade representatives of recent times, they're asked a question or they're hint or they give the implication that they've never seen anything like this before. All right, so here's what's going on: is you can put tariffs on a country. And that what that is, when they start moving things into your country, you can put a tariff on it, right, at the border and customs, that somehow this calculation gets done. And we've talked about that. You know, a pair of Nike shoes comes in, it's $200, let's say. Let's just keep the number around. So $200, you get a percent tariff on that, okay? But you get it on the cost coming in. So let's say, you know, Nike's bringing a shoe in and its cost is like, you know, $15 or $25 coming out of somewhere out of Asia. The tariff gets applied. And it doesn't necessarily get applied to the differential between the cost of that to the cost that the end user buys it for. And a lot of that they'll claim to, you know, marketing costs, paying for, you know, big talent names in the sports industry, stuff like that, right? So there's, and then profits, okay? Well, Nike's been under pressure for a while, and a lot of this has come with these tariffs. So that's one way of going about it, right? You get goods coming in, it gets to the border, it gets hit with a tariff on the cost coming in. But then the profits actually, that gets dealt with by Nike, right? The spread between, you know, $20 for the pair of shoes and $150 or $200 that they sell it for, that just goes into the whole system of, you know, profits, losses, net income, and then taxes and so forth, right? And then those taxes go back into the system, and then that's how the government makes money off that whole situation, right, is corporate taxes. Here's the thing. President Trump is now working with AMD and NVIDIA, and he said to them, We've seen this go back and forth, and you're wondering what the heck is going on. And we saw Intel, okay, this Lip Bhutan guy, right, call for his resignation last week. This is what's a little different, right? This is the pay for play, all right? So with President Trump, everything seems to be transactional, where he says, okay, go ahead and sell your chips, these H20 chips, whatever, go ahead and sell them to China, but we want a cut of that, okay? We want 15%. So go ahead and sell it, but we're going to get it going out the door to China. Okay, so it's almost a reverse tariff, right, Frankie? I mean, this is kind of a upside down way of getting at it. And what you're really doing is instead of going for China, you're going after the corporations that are selling these things into China. So, you know, originally this was a lot about security. You know, like, we can't sell these chips and we can't sell the AI because we want to, you know, we want to beat China in this race to the AI, whatever this target is, whatever the finish line is to this AI thing. Okay, we want to beat China to this, you know, finish point, right? Whatever it's this year, next year, 10 years, 20 years, whatever it is. So we want to restrict flow of these chips to them. But at some point you say, wait a minute, we're not going to be able to do that because they're going to innovate too, right? It's not like we might have an advantage over them, but it's not that big of an advantage. And our older chips, like these H20s and these other, I forget what it is, the M1 something out of AMD. At some point these chips, you know, someone else is going to produce them. Okay. So you want to say, okay, well, we don't want to, like, why would we be silly, foolish, and not sell this stuff and make profits off of it? Let's go ahead and sell it because they're going to get it someplace anyway. And if we don't control it, then it's going to allow Huawei and these other groups, right, Frankie?
Right,
something
exactly.
Like a Huawei to rise up. And now they become bigger and stronger. So in some ways, you're keeping down the competition by dumping. We're almost doing what China's doing. We're dumping it into their system, okay, just like they've dumped. So we're almost turning the tables on them, dumping our chips into theirs so they can't get big and strong. And we're charging our corporations a tax to do that. So we're not hitting China, but we're hitting the corporations and taking a cut out of it. See how it's been flipped upside down?
We're going to see in how ridiculous these companies, like, you know, Nike is probably the best example of just like how absurd how greedy do they get, because they're going to try to pass all the possible costs onto us. And it's just like, how high are they going to go? Because no one's dealing with it anymore. The ruse, it's almost like the Wizard of Oz, you know, that the curtain has been opened. It's like, as soon as you see the numbers on how much these guys get their, they get their shoes for in, you know, basically child labor, and how much they sell it, like, we're the suckers, you know? So it's just, there's a lot of things going on, but just at the end of the day, it's nice that people will finally be waking up to how much we've been scammed by these companies. It's insane.
Yeah. Well, the question is, with these chips, something that China wants, right? Because China doesn't want our Nike shoes. They got plenty of those, right? They can make them themselves. They've got the factory. But these chips, there's something they want, right? They're in this race with us. Because they know we're going to show something on Wednesday too, you know, the growth in energy needed for this. It's hard to take this stuff and communicate it. You know, you need charts and time and all these things to communicate this stuff. But you can see that the race is really between the U.S. and China. When you look at the energy and you look at the AI, Europe is sort of going to grow a little bit, but the rest of the world's not going to grow at all on this AI front as it's projected now. But the U.S. is projected to grow the most, and then China the next most. So the race is, again, between the U.S. and China. I don't even think Russia shows up on the thing, right? So maybe they're a wild card out there, but the race is really between the U.S. and China. So the question is, if you can take now and dump these chips back on China, you almost actually weaken them because they never developed that internal ability to compete on that big level. So it's sort of like, you know, in the past, China's always been given the upper hand, right? They get the technology, they get the cheap labor, and now they're able to make this stuff so cheap that they can undercut the whole world, right? And take away everybody's profit margin. And that's what has drawn in all this foreign direct investment into China, right? All this money flows in there. But if you can turn that around and something China wants, right? This is something China wants because they know this is their only chance, right? They have to find a way to outcompete on the AI front, or they're going to lose. And so, you know, this is something they want. And so what do? You just hit the corporations, NVIDIA and AMD, selling this back. And last week we saw Lisa Su of AMD during her conference call after AMD reported earnings. She was like, she couldn't even answer questions, right? So you know that this has just happened within the last 4 or 5 days, this decision. It's almost like they're sitting around a table. I mean, you wonder if they're like sitting around Frankie back on the back porch outside, you know, the White House, you know, smoking cigars. And somebody's like, hey, I got an idea. Let's do what China did to us. You know,
genius.
Let's see how it works. Let's give it a shot next week. You know, I mean, I don't know if this is part of.
I'm glad I brought the bourbon. What a good idea.
Yep. Yep, right outside Susie Wiles' office. We know she's been known to smoke a cigar or two, right? So it's probably, she's probably in on the whole thing, you know. So anyway, all right. But I just thought that was fascinating. You know, the trade people haven't seen anything like this. And so really what they're doing is it's an export control, right? So the question is they can loosen and tighten this thing called export control. So again, it gets confusing. We don't want to get in lost in all the terms, right? Export, because I'm like, what are export controls, you know? But essentially this is what it is. They can raise or lower the fees on this stuff, or they can allow or disallow it with these, you know, contracts or these, you know, what do they call it? There's a name they have for this and I can't remember. But anyway, it's allowing, you know, giving them the paperwork, the authorization to sell this stuff into these other countries, and this one being China. So anyway, to wrap that up, the Intel CEOs headed to the White House after President Trump called for his resignation last week. We're going to get something on that this week. Is this guy going to stick around? Is President Trump going to get him to play ball? Is he going to get Intel to do what, you know, what he probably thinks they should be doing? There's something fishy going on here with this Intel thing. And Frankie called that out a long time ago, that Intel was kind of headed into the, you know, into the gutter. And now I just wonder what's going to come of this. Intel could be, you know, if President Trump gets behind this and Lip Bhutan plays ball, okay, and whatever negotiation goes on behind the scenes, that's what we don't know because we're not part of that. We're not privy to that. But Intel's in the dumps. This might be a chance, right, if you're a counter-trend player where you say, wait a minute, Intel's not getting money from this Chips and Science Act anymore to build these factories. President Trump wants them to build factories. We know we got the foundry side. We know we've got the regular chipsets, okay, basic stuff for phones and things like that. But then we have the foundry stuff for these, for this AI stuff. So these heavy-duty chips. So you can see this big play that's going on, you know. And do you see that, Frankie, like the trying to establish ourselves as the big-time player in these real chips, the real forefront ones, trying to undercut China to keep them out of the game, make it so cheap that there's no profit margin in it for them, that now they're the ones that are struggling. So we've kind of, again, over that cigar, whatever, the cigar bar over the weekend, maybe these guys have figured something out, right? And it's actually pretty crafty if you think about it.
Makes sense. So.
All right. We're just trying to tear it apart. We'll see what happens. Okay. So let's keep rolling here. We've got a couple things. Let's get through this. Bessent says trade deals to wrap up around October. So he's given us this time frame. Again, trying to prep things probably for the Santa Claus rally, you know, if there is going to be one. I'm questioning that. Again, we'll see what happens on the full upside in these harmonics. But I think that's probably what he's trying to calm things down into the end of the year to see if there isn't. We'll see. We'll see what he's up to. But he's made it clear that the world wants access to the U.S. market. Okay, he was out talking about that this weekend with Brett Baer on Fox. And then he was asked the question about these BRICS nations, right? Lula da Silva of Brazil, again, high tariffs, President Trump laying into them from a political perspective. Also, we have, who was it? India's Modi, right? He was getting together with Lula da Silva. And then there are even talks of getting President Xi in the mix. So again, they're trying to reform this BRICS, even though President Trump really sort of slashed it down at the knees last, you know, really over the last couple months when he said, you know, don't even think about it, right? Don't even think about putting another currency together. And I wouldn't want to mess with our Treasury and the Stablecoin Act and Genius Act and that stuff in the short run, because I think that it's pretty well established. Longer term, I'm not sure what it does to us. You know, it could just be a massive surveillance situation. But in the short run, I think it's going to be hard to compete. And I think China doesn't have much of a shot on that front. Okay. Or Brazil or India. Okay. So again, they're all subject to what we're doing. President Trump's really turned the tables on a lot of people in this whole situation. So Bessent says that the world really wants access to the U.S., and that's really the leverage that they're using. So again, this comes back to we the people, all of you out there, right? This is really what President Trump is leveraging. We just have to hope it's all for, you know, we just have to hope they're doing the best they can with all this stuff. Okay. One other quick thing I'm going to try to transition this stuff into where we want to go with this into this housing stuff. Okay. So there was another report of lithium. So there's a company over there called CATL in China, and they shut down the lithium market, okay? Now, why, right? It's one of the biggest lithium mines in the world. Lithium producers have struggled with a globally tight supply, a glut, okay, amplified by demand headwinds for these electric vehicles. All right, so they shut it down. Lithium prices soar, no surprise, but why? Okay, so again, part of this waiting game is China. We don't know. I don't know exactly what's going on there, but I think there's something to, is China not, if the electric vehicles are already oversupplied, how are we doing, Frankie? Am I just rambling here? I don't want to go on. We probably need to run some clips here to break it. Good. All right. All right. So let me just wrap this one up. And then we want to go into this stuff. We'll talk a little bit about this, you know, some of the things that happened with NATO this weekend. All right. So the situation we have here is this, do they sense that the electric vehicles in China aren't going to progress like China had hoped? And is this a sign that they're having to shut down the lithium because there's just no demand, or not the demand that they expected? Are the tables getting turned on China? That's what we want to watch and see. You know, lithium is an upstream thing to these electric vehicles, right? It's one of the main components. They need this for the battery technology, the batteries that go into these. So again, is that what's going on here? Why did they shut this mine down? And why did, you know, and we know why lithium prices soared, is because they shut down this massive mine for lithium. But the question is, you know, why did they do it? Why did CATL do this? Okay, so we also see the China housing market struggling. Okay, the economic data is not looking good. They're committed to trying to keep these growth numbers up and these potentially these numbers that are lies. And that's why I was going through that stuff on China and why we want to watch that this week. Okay, so we seem to be, again, we're waiting, we seem to be waiting on China to implode, right? And just continuing delay. In the meantime, making money off the AMD chips, the NVIDIA chips, finding creative ways to still get money out of this whole situation back into the US, but without actually forming the tariffs and delaying China as long as possible. Okay. So we know we have the talks this week of, I think it's Friday, right, with Alaska. President Trump and Putin are going to meet in Alaska. Doesn't look like Zelensky's going to be there. And here's Mark Rutte talking about that, right? Mark Rutte of NATO. Here is The Hague saying Trump is testing Putin, okay, with this meeting in Alaska.
He is still the main threat to the Western alliance. There's no doubt. And I think it is very good that President Trump will test him. And we'll see how far he can get on Friday, starting this process. He basically broke the deadlock, President Trump, in February, starting the dialogue with Putin. I think that was crucial. We had a great NATO summit under his leadership, committing to 5% defense spending. So that is a clear signal to our main threat, which is Russia, that we are serious. And then he opened the floodgates 3 weeks ago of American lethal weapons to be delivered into Ukraine, coordinated by NATO. And of course, the secondary sanctions. He started them with putting them on India, which is one of the biggest buyers of Russian oil and gas.
Okay, so this next one is, what's her name, Frankie? Margaret? I can't remember her. Margaret Brennan?
Yep, our girl.
Margaret Brennan.
Our favorite drunken housewife, Craig.
Okay, so here she is. So we know that she's not that smart, right? She's told to basically ask this question to start prepping minds for this. So here she goes.
Conference room in Alaska, we're going to see a 1938 moment. We're in an attempt to immediately halt a war. The groundwork is laid for an even bigger conflict because of concessions that are made. Are you comfortable with Ukraine being excluded from these negotiations on Friday?
What will happen on Friday is testing Putin by President Trump. And I commend him for the fact that he organized this meeting. I think it is important. And obviously, when it comes to peace talks, the ceasefire, and what happens after that on territories, on security guarantees for Ukraine. Ukraine will have to be and will be involved. But on Friday, it is important to see how serious Putin is. And the only one who can do that is President Trump. So it's really crucial that that meeting takes place. It will not be the final say on this. There will not be the final deal on this. Of course, Ukraine will have to be involved and Europe. But it is important to start the next phase of this process, putting pressure on the Russians, exactly as President Trump has been doing over the last 6 months.
All right. You were smiling, Frank. You have a thought there?
My thought was, you know, Netherlands, something about that accent. It just sounds very evil, but I kind of like it. That was just my thought.
Like the villain.
Irrelevant.
A little bit of a villain sound to it.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. And so here they're talking about, you know, all of the, again, the Western Front is all on the same page, and Putin has no say on any major issues. This is what Mark Rutte, again, this is one-sided thinking here, Frankie. Here he is. It's pretty crazy.
I cannot go into all the details. That would be strange. But let me assure you the following, that we are all on the same page, the Americans, the Europeans, and Ukraine, that when it comes to the geostrategic position of Ukraine in the future, when it comes to whatever is the size of the Ukrainian military, when it comes to NATO's posture on the eastern flank in countries like Latvia and Lithuania, Estonia, Finland, Poland, that Putin has absolutely no say on any of these issues.
Okay, so, I don't know, pretty confident. Oh, I mean, a little, would you say overconfident, Frankie? A little overconfident there?
It's interesting. It's like, oh, hey, oh, what happened? I didn't know it all ended. I didn't know there was resolutions going on.
What? You kind of want to let things play out before you sound that confident. Putin has zero say. He's got zero.
It's insane. It's like, can we just wait till after the meeting? You could talk whatever crap you want. Just let the let it happen. Like, this guy doesn't have ears everywhere. He doesn't have his staff checking everything. Please. And just real quick, I want to just take this time to let the people know that you've probably noticed Rumble's growing fast and not slowing down. They're building a real alternative to big tech that puts creators first and actually protects free speech. And now there's a Rumble Premium, an easy way to upgrade your experience with premium. You get ad-free viewing across the platform, no pre-rolls, no interruptions, just content you came for. Plus, premium members unlock exclusive content like bonus videos, behind-the-scenes drops, and more from your favorite creators. Right now, Rumble is offering $10 off an annual subscription. Just go to rumble.com/premium and use the promo code studio at checkout. That's rumble.com/premium, promo code studio. No ads, more freedom, and content you actually care about. That's the deal. Back to you, Craig.
All right. So here we have this next clip of Lindsey Graham saying there will be land swaps to get this to the end. Okay, so here he is saying, you know, this is what's going to end the Russian-Ukraine war, is some kind of a land swap. It's big, two clips here, but catch his first one.
Out in Yermak this morning, the vice president was on the ground in Europe yesterday listening to Ukraine and our European allies about what a good deal would look like. And the reviews about J.D. Vance are very, very positive all across the board. Everybody said that J.D. listened well, he understood sort of the red lines. And I think everybody knows that how this war ends can be a good thing or a bad thing. If it ends in a way, it looks like that Putin's overly rewarded, there goes Taiwan. You can't end a war without talking. I do hope that Zelensky can be part of the process. I'll leave that up to the White House. But I have every confidence in the world that the president is going to go to meet Putin from a position of strength, that he's going to look out for Europe and Ukrainian needs to end this war honorably, and it's time to end this war honorably. But how we do it will be historical, and I'm confident President Trump will get a good deal for all.
Seething.
All right, Trump. So we don't believe anything Lindsey Graham has to say, do we, Frankie?
Fat, closeted piece of work. This is a man who legitimately all of Ukraine and Russia, this man made it his life's work to make sure that this conflict happened. We look back 10, 15 years ago, this guy was in Ukraine pumping them up. We're going to defeat Putin. We're going to take over Russia. And now he's like, I don't know. I hope Zelensky comes in. You put him in this position. You wanted people to die so you could make a buck from Raytheon and Lockheed. It's just like, and now you're going to come and speak like as if you have any sort of balanced position in this. He just is trying to protect his I don't know, gay brothel in Ukraine, probably. That's all he cares about. This man is a psychopath.
And here he is talking about territory will likely be given away to Russia.
This is a map of Ukraine. You can see the areas in red currently under Russian control. Now, President Trump this week didn't rule out Ukraine having to give up some of its territory, something the Ukrainians have rejected. Do you believe that Ukraine should sign a deal that includes giving up any part of their territory, Senator?
Well, think about East Berlin and West Berlin as a way a conflict can be settled at least for a period of time. North Korea and South Korea is in a state of truce. There's never been a final settlement. But I come on your show a good bit. I want to be honest with you. Ukraine's not going to evict every Russian, and Russia's not going to Kyiv. So there'll be some land swaps at the end. But what would a good deal look like? Make sure that 2022 doesn't happen again. On Biden's watch and Obama's watch, Russia invades. The goal for me, and I think President Trump, is to end it forever. Now, what would that look like? You'll have some land swaps, but only after you have security guarantees to Ukraine to prevent Russia from doing this again. You need to tell Putin what happens if he does it a third time. Pre-invasion sanctions that would crush his economy if he ever did this again. In 2022, we didn't help Ukraine at all. Biden didn't. Militarily, we need to keep Ukraine strong, keep flowing them strong and modern weapons and security guarantees with European forces on the ground as tripwires to prevent a third invasion. We want to end this with a sovereign, independent, self-governing Ukraine and a situation where Putin cannot do this the third time without being crushed. This is really a dress rehearsal for Taiwan. And as to China, we had a good talk. I played golf with the president yesterday. Saturday was the 10-day deadline. China is very much on his mind. He can tell you the top five oil purchasers of Ukrainian oil. He knows who they are. And if this doesn't end well with Putin, everybody buying Russian oil and keeping his war machine going in Russia, you're going to pay a heavy price like India.
Well, I hope he left the caddies alone while he was golfing with President Trump.
How far you think he can drive the ball, Frankie? What, 120, 130 maybe?
Graham?
Yeah.
He's in the
He's got a 200-yard drive in him. You think he's got a 200-yard drive in him?
He probably goes to the women tees, I'd imagine, definitely. This guy, though, I mean, he's like, we just want to prevent a third invasion, but basically describing only what could be World War III. It's like, we want to stop a third invasion by setting up a World War III scenario with European boots on the ground, and that'll never be American. Yeah.
And he's mentioning Taiwan, right? That's the next one out front. Remember we talk about, Palmer Luckey, right, with what's the name of the company? You know, the drone. They make all the drones. I'm drawing a blank right now. I can't remember the name of it. Did you pull it up?
Oh, Palmer Oculus Luckey. You're talking about.
No, after Oculus. He's now making drones, right? So he's got a company that makes drones now. And we've covered in here.
Yeah, this is Matt Gaetz, his brother-in-law, right?
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, he's talked about this war, right? Palmer Luckey has talked about, you know, they got a target of 2028, 2029. Now, the reason I bring all that up is we've got these markets at highs, okay? And so Martin Armstrong, again, some of you, you know, again, I respect his work. There's clearly something to what he's doing, right? He's the one that talks about Ukraine just goes off the map. It's like a flat line on the heart rate monitor, right? You know, you're in the hospital, you know, right? Just flat lines. Data just goes away. Again, Martin Armstrong's not always right, okay? But the point is, like, I do respect what he does, especially when he's making this kind of a call. He's been out for weeks, you know, doing interviews, pounding the table on war, you know, world war. He's got the signals in his model. He keeps showing them in as many different ways as he can. So I'm paying attention to this, all right? Now, we see that we're getting close to these upside, you know, objectives in these stocks. This right here is the S&P, okay? And we're sitting right now at the light green line, okay? So right in here, and we're sitting at 64.18, all right? Now, the next target's the 7.8s up here, right at the light blue line, 64.95, 6,500. The next target up here is the bright green line at 65.74. So the question is, will we get there, okay? Do we get to the bright green line? That is a spot where we should see some kind of a major reaction. Now, we did see both of these things hold up down here at the halfway, the dark green line. Okay, this is the S&P. We had this trend channel. I'm going to go ahead and pull that off there. It served a purpose for us, but now it's gone. So let's just keep it clean. Right down here, it held at the dark green line. Let's flip over to the NASDAQ. Same thing, right? NASDAQ came down, hit the dark green line, okay, after getting to the 7.8s. So here it got to the 7.8s, came all the way back down to the dark green line, the halfway, And that held. So both of them held at the halfway. That's what we want to see. They're not in complete synchronicity, right? They're not totally synchronized because here's the NASDAQ. It's sitting just below all-time highs again at the 7.8s. So it doesn't have that far to go to get to the bright green line. What happens is the NASDAQ pushed through the bright green line to allow the S&P to come up to it. Does it stop there and hesitate to allow the S&P to come up and catch up with it? Does the S&P never get there? These are the things we're watching for. But again, back to Martin Armstrong, back to war. Okay, but he's got some signals lined up, Frankie, for this Friday and into early next week, right? He's got this, he calls it his kind of like chaos indicator, right? Where I forget what he calls it, but he's got, you know, he's got 72 models in this thing, right? But this one's flaring up with chaos, right? Starting around this period of time. So the question is, what happens out of these meetings? Is it a piece of cake and is it smooth as silk? Do we just slide through this stuff or is there more going on? Okay, so that's why I show this stuff now. Red flag, okay, the NASDAQ or the Dow, right? So again, the S&P above the halfway trend is clearly up, right? NASDAQ above the halfway trend is clearly up, okay? So again, we're just looking for targets now, right? Upside targets. Now, the Dow, I got these two spots marked in red, right? This red, this first little tall, skinny one, that was the 12 straight down days that nobody covered, right? Gave us an indication. Again, market rallied all the way back up to retest that high. Then it sold off, okay? That was probably the biggest red flag, plus the bogus stuff around the DeepSeek and the, you know, and then the phony, look, the tariffs are real between Canada and Mexico, but the way it was presented to us was bogus, right? It was fake. Back in that period of time, right, the mainstream media dumped it on us, and I think it was intentional. So again, we had DeepSeek, kind of bogus stories around the Canada-Mexico tariffs, because again, where have they been? Mexico has been quiet. Canada has been pretty quiet. Not really much going on there. All the other tariffs have been really pretty much everywhere else. Then we get these gap downs and so forth, you know, that occurred toward the end of the year. So red flags all over. Now, the Dow won't rally, right? It won't break to new highs. So again, red flags. The other thing that won't rally is the Russell, the small cap index, right? It's not rallying either. It's not confirming this rally out of the S&P and the NASDAQ. So what's dragging this S&P up? Tech stocks. What's dragging the NASDAQ up? Surely tech stocks. The question is, and I still need to dig into this and look, do the research on this Dow, like what's holding this thing back, right? It's only 30 stocks in there. We should be able to figure out what's holding it back. I keep saying that, but I haven't done it. I need to do that to figure that out. Okay, so that's that. There was something else I wanted to show here. The dollar. Since it's currency Monday, let's just take a quick look at the dollar. This is our longer term situation in this, where we've got this converging triangle. We've got the little gold shaded box. We want to see the dollar. It's basically flirting with that. It's coming back up. It's right on the bottom of it, right down in here. Okay. It's kind of messing around with that. We want to see it climb back. I want to see it climb back up in there because, dollar up means deflation. Okay, that fits with what's going on in China, right? That fits with what's potentially going on, you know, in Europe, in Japan, right? And potentially even the U.S. Kind of fits with these rate cuts too, if you think about it, okay? But we'll get into more of that with debt and then energy this week. All right, so I think that's good on these things. Man, I can't believe we ran out of time again. Well, let's go ahead and take a look at this. Let's go ahead and look at just so much to cover. All right, let's take a look at silver real fast here. We've got silver. Okay, so silver's hanging around that white dashed line, right? The concept here is hopefully silver can rally, make a run toward that $42, $43 an ounce. How do you manage the risk? Originally, we talked, you know, last week we were talking about this somewhere down in that range below the dark green line, somewhere between 34, 35, with the idea sitting at, you know, right now it's sitting at 38. So you got $4 to $5 of upside, and you would have potentially, you know, $2 or $3 of downside. So again, trying to find lower risk situations. This isn't the lowest risk situation right now, but if you happen to be in silver and you're sitting tight, trade around the idea, try to help put yourself in the better situation. And again, if you like silver to the upside, right, you know, risk is around 34, 35, and the upside, first upside target would be 42, 43. And then the next one, if that gets blown through, would be $50 all time highs. And then we see gold selling off, and I'll just talk about that because we don't have the time. But gold last week, we saw these tariffs come through on Switzerland on gold bars, created a spike in the gold market. And I think this could be a red flag for highs in the gold market. Again, some kind of a pullback to maybe 3,000 an ounce. I think longer term, gold could maybe see 4, 5, 6, maybe even 10,000, depending upon how all these currencies roll out. And but we'll come back and cover that stuff this week, right? Those are the big things we want to get through. A little bit of energy, a lot with the metals, okay? And then for sure, we got to go through this housing market. And we want to go through this private equity stuff this week too. Those are two big things I want to make sure we get through, is housing and the impact it has, and then this private equity trying to get dumped on people's 401ks. Those are the two big targets for this week. I think there's important, just super critical, two super critical things. Housing's so important to the US economy, and so is this private equity. What they're going to do, they're looking for an exit strategy. All right, Jeremy Harrell's up next with Rise Up. Check out the LFA lineup throughout the day. Have a blessed day, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow for Debt Markets Tuesday. Thank you. Bye.